Hi, everybody. I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, everybody. I'm Beth. I'm an alcoholic. What did that say? It takes a lot of energy
to uphold the delusion. Yeah, it does. Right? It's exhausting. So, last week we did 10 and 11. Sandy, thank you for filling in. Greatly appreciate that. Always interesting how this program works, at least in my life. Yesterday I sat on Beth's couch and was telling her how detached I felt, and I couldn't feel anything, and it's kind of one step away from the efforts for me, which is where I usually end up picking up. So just letting kind of my support system know, plus it doesn't feel, it just like, I feel nothing, it's blah. And, you know, when you put things out there, you know, for me, that's leaning in, because I was always, I'm always okay, and I'm great, and everything's wonderful, and always had the facade. So that was being very authentic for me. And it's scary for me, because it makes me vulnerable. But I put it out, you know, to my sisters, my sponsor, and to this God of mine. Mm-hmm. And today, I spent the day going to see two sick and suffering alcoholics. One we could not find that she has either passed or they've let her go home to pass there, but alcoholism has, her liver's gone. I mean, the whole works. And the other gentleman that we visited has full-blown wet brain and sat in the cafeteria with food all over him, didn't know, I mean, he's my age, and just, I mean, and that'll be his life, you know, physically he is okay, but his mind is gone, and I felt that, I mean, God answered, I walked out of there, heartbroken, it's sad to see such sick and suffering, but also overwhelmed with gratitude that I get to sit here, you know, that I was walking out of there, that all of us are sitting here tonight. So please don't take where your butt is right now for granted, because there's a lot of us that just don't make it. And I don't pretend to know the whys and the hows and all of that. I do know that there's a solution, but we lose a lot of people. So I'm really grateful to be here tonight and to have you back.
Yay!
So why don't you take all that energy of yours and bring us up 1 through 11 and get us up to 12?
So in 1, we're powerless. And if you're new to recovery, what powerless means is looking back at your drinking career and seeing where did I pick up alcohol and couldn't stop. Or couldn't control my consumption, and where did I control my consumption and not able to enjoy myself? It says in the book that we couldn't control and enjoy our drinking. So in my career, I either controlled it or I enjoyed it. And even when I tried to control it towards the end, I couldn't even control it. It was just enjoy it. And it wasn't even enjoying it. It was just feeding the beast. And I was powerless. If you've got time in recovery, it's so important to lean in and remind ourselves that this book does not keep you sober. The only thing, and this book tells us that this book does not keep us sober. The only thing that stands between me and a drink has always been, will always be, and it is today, my God. So what this book does is it helps us acknowledge a power greater than ourselves, get a relationship with a power greater than ourselves, and then perfect that relationship and connection and maintain that on a daily basis. You know, when they say one day at a time, that's what they're talking about. We don't not drink one day at a time. I couldn't not drink one day at a time. I can't do anything. I'm powerless. But what I can do is, you know, it also says in this book, God doesn't make too hard terms with those who seek. And literally, it can be seconds, it can be centimeters that it takes for us to just reach out and into the universe or wherever your God exists and just try to make contact. He's never failed me. And that kind of goes into step 2, which is you know, we get this relationship with our higher power, and we come to believe and truly believe. When I say believe, if you're new, just believe. In fact, if you think I believe, that's enough. But if you've got time in these rooms, or you've been here before, or you think you have a faith, it's time to take a step back and go, where is my faith lacking? Where am I agnostic in my life? And where do I need to be awakened to the fact that the only thing that's going to restore me or bring me sanity is a power greater than myself and my relationship with him? And then in step three, all we do is make a decision. What are we making? There's two different things we're kind of making a decision on. If you're new, what you're making a decision about is to do 4 through 9. Like, straight up, suck it up, shut up, sit down, write, get your inventory done, and get into and through this process. That's what the third step prayer is like if this is your first time around. But if you've been here for a while, I dare you to lean in and start to take that concept that we talked about earlier in this series, where we talked about what abandon myself means. It's, you know, think about that child that you birthed that you love more than anything else, and giving it to the fire department. You know, what is that called? The thing where you drop the kid off, abandon. You know, think about yourself. Think about the firehouse being God and you being that child that you created, and you're going to drop and leave that child. You're going to leave yourself in God's hands, and watch how real stuff gets. And an inventory, if you're new, just make a list of people. Just straight up talk to your sponsor, sit down, get with prayer, take your third step prayer for 7 days, and sit down every day for 5 minutes, say the third step prayer, and then just write whatever names come to mind. And then start that process, start that inventory. I can promise you, I've been through tons of inventories. I've done them tons of different ways. You know, 4-column, 9-column, break it out into A, B, and C's. You know what? I don't care. If it comes from the big book, suck it up. Do it. And get through that inventory. I promise you, there's nothing on there that you don't already know about. Yeah, it's incredibly overwhelming. It's an incredibly scary. And just put 9 out of your mind when you're writing. And just write, man. Just understand that the goal here is to get to live a life that you can't even imagine how awesome it is. Just keep your mind on that prize. And in 5... get honest. Get so gut-wrenchingly honest that you want to, like, crawl into a hole and cover your head with a blanket. In fact, if you're scared, bring a blanket to your 5th step so you can, like, hide underneath it. Like, I'm totally in for it. Do you know what I mean? So when we do 5, you know, I got to tell you, I have two different types of girls. I got the girls that come to me and do their 5th step, and it's really super organized, and, you know, it's like, I had one girl, oh my God, I had this one girl, I'm still friends with her now today, this is like 20 years ago, but I had this one girl that literally had an accordion file. She made you look so less than organized, which is saying so much. You're still my favorite. It's okay. So I've got 2 types of girls. I got the accordion girls, and then I got the hot mess girls. Hot mess girl right here. And there's like post-it notes all over, like a notebook that's never been written, and like papers shoved in, and like all this stuff, right? Accordion girls, they come, they do their entire 5th step, and then they go to leave, and they're like, I forgot to tell you something. And the real stuff comes out. Yeah. Post-it girl, me. They dump the big stuff like before we're in the kitchen getting coffee. Yeah. And they're like, so just so we're clear, I was abused when I was 4, and like just right out. I'm like, okay, so just let's wait a minute. I have to sit down. let me tell you something. I'm not listening until I've had half a cup of coffee. So just stop talking.
No, so up there, right?
Mm-hmm. And I've got 3rd floor, right? I have a 3rd floor in my house. It's a tiny little room. It's very cozy. It's a safe environment, right? If your sponsor wants to do your 5th step in Starbucks, get another sponsor. Got to be an intimate setting.
Safe.
It's got to be a safe setting. Like, this is the place where you're going to dump some stuff. And then, sorry, total spoiler alert here, you're also going to learn some large truths about yourself and how you set the ball rolling on some of the things that you've been playing the victim on for, like, your whole life. And nobody wants to hear that stuff in Starbucks. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not judging anybody. I'm totally judging anybody that does Starbucks 5th steps. I'm just
saying.
And
we think we're that important that everybody's listening. You know, so like you just can't. Yeah,
we're in Westfield. People are listening. People want to know. Dirt.
It is some good stuff.
I bet we could, dude. Yeah. Anyway, so there's five, right? Can I just tell you? Please understand that if you don't have a good relationship with your sponsor, and I'm saying this for all the people that are under 90 days in this room and are getting here for the first time, like, dude, be honest with your sponsor.
Tell them.
They don't care. It's not their life. It's your life. And they're not going to save your life. God is. And the only person that can bring it into the universe is you. So suck it up, lean in, and just go for it. I promise you the world will not explode. No one in Westfield will spread rumors about you on this. I'm just kidding. I totally have lived here for 6 years almost. I love Westfield. But anyway, so just suck it up and do it. And listen, if you need somebody to dump with and you don't feel safe, call me. You can dump anything with me. And if anybody ever asks me a question, chances are I probably won't remember what you told me or what I said. So we're good. And then in six, oh my God, six can be the easiest and most painful step. In the first run through, in your first run through in your steps, just write a list of your character defects and do step seven. Like, stop killing yourselves. Write a list of character defects. The reality is you can practice the opposite all you want, but if the only thing that stands between you and a drink is God, guess what the only thing that stands between you and your character defects is? Anybody? Everybody? Oh, there we go. So I used to be of that school that's like, oh, I'm totally going to set 18 alarms. I'm going to wake up on time and I'm going to be early for work. And I have to tell you, to this day, I'm 28 years sober. To this day, if I say I'm definitely not spending any money on my stupid phone game, it's like 5 minutes later, I'm like, it's only $9. Oh, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm powerless. I do know what's wrong with me. I just choose to ignore it. And then it's so funny, too, because I will say stuff like, I am not spending any money today. Uh-huh. And Dan will be like, give me your wallet. Dan's my husband.
What?
Yeah. So, and I'm like, what? It sounds like you're spending money today. He's like, forget it. You try to exert your will and God just laughs at you. So, where was I? Oh, so step six.
Seven,
right.
Six and seven.
So if you think that you're going to remove your character defects or you're going to do the opposite or act as if, like, listen, we all need to act as if and we all need to fake it till we make it on Thanksgiving dinner when we're sitting in front of our aunt who's done nothing but criticize us our entire lives. I totally support the fake it till you make it. Shut your mouth. If you can't say anything nice, shut your mouth and just eat a lot of turkey. Enough tryptophan will knock anybody out. When it comes to your character defects, you are perfect. If God is perfect and God made you, you are perfect the way that you are. When God is ready and that character defect no longer serves him, he will remove it. Your job is to just be willing to let him. And that can be scary. You go through that list of character defects and all of a sudden you're like, what am I going to do to self-protect myself? Yeah. What am I going to do if I live in Westfield and I'm not allowed to gossip anymore? That could be rough. And what am I going to do if I can't be sarcastic anymore? What am I going to do if I can't yell at people to get away from me anymore? I promise you, God is not going to leave you raw. I promise you, you're going to feel like God's going to leave you raw, but he's not. If God brought you to it, he'll bring you through it. And I know that sounds super cliche, but it's awesome. True. But it's true, right? The will of God will never bring you to a place where the grace of God will not protect you. I am a living example of that. Every single day, I have an 11 and 13-year-old. They're not dead, and Dyfus hasn't taken them yet, so clearly God's in charge. And 18 years of marriage, and my husband hasn't left yet. He's going to go, like, any day. I know. He's maybe he's just that dumb. I don't know. So, right. So, I don't know what's wrong with me tonight.
I'm going a little crazy.
So, listen, the reality of six and seven is you write a list of your character defects, you get on your knees, you say the seven-step prayer, you get up, and you keep moving forward. And the experience of 6 and 7 can never fully be explained. I think I do a really good job of explaining it, but then again, I think I'm good at everything. But you need to experience it. This entire process, you just need to experience it. If you're sitting in this meeting Sunday after Sunday with, listen, I know that they get, usually, they get really awesome speakers in here, hearing this message, and it's not happening for you in your life, if you don't feel like you've got an awesome experience to share, start again or continue. Lean in. 6 and 7 is by far my favorite thing, my favorite experience in my entire life. I mean, everything, nothing even comes close to the experience of 6 and 7. Whether it be painful or spiritual or bright or dark, it doesn't matter. This is where we get to shift. This is where God actually goes into our soul, in our gut, our like our inner being, and actually shifts us. Carl Jung talks about all of a sudden, you know, there's this major rearrangement. He's talking about 6 and 7. In 8, what we do is we take a list of everybody on our resentment, fear, sex, and harms inventories, and we write those names down, get index cards, and start writing your amends. If things like but or because start to come out of your pencil, just stop writing and write a period. I promise you, I am saving you a lot of paper. And write it in pencil, because your sponsor's going to have some stuff to say. And you're going to be like, but, and you're going to be like, oh, I can't say that. Right. So then in 9, get on the phone today. If you have outstanding amends, the only person that you're keeping from the light is yourself. Our job is to go out into the world and actually have eyeball to eyeball contact with the people that we've harmed, and we're going to take responsibility for what we've done. You stole money, you pay it back. You harmed them, you apologize. You weren't a good friend. We don't sit there and tell them things like, I totally gossiped about you in Starbucks for like 6 months straight, because you're opening a bag of worms for that human being, right? So this is why we go to our sponsor, who has more experience than we do, and we run these cards by them. And then your sponsor's going to go, get your ass out there and start making amends. Do it. Actually make the appointments. If you've got amends that you've been sitting on for the last 10 years, go make those amends. Why are you waiting? Yes, it sucks to make amends to people sometimes. Just get it over with. You will free up so much space in your heart. We only get 100% every day, right? Think of it in terms of energy. You get 100%. All of these things that we keep inside require energy to keep inside. All of these resentments that we harbor require energy. Delusional lies that we tell ourselves require energy. I was functioning on like 2% energy after all the other stuff that I had to maintain. Now, I keep as clear as possible. I'm usually running like between 80 and 99% energy is being spent on the life I want to live. Instead of maintaining some crap inside of me, I don't want to live like that anymore. I want to get up in the morning, stare out my window at the guy's house that is just the weirdest looking house in my town, and think, what were they thinking? I swear to God, I do this every morning. What were they thinking when they built that freaking thing? Anyway, so then we're going to move through 10 and 11. And I got to tell you, I start my girls on 10 the day I meet them. You have a problem, reach to God. You can't get it with God, reach out to your network. And if y'all can't figure it out, then call me. Right? Oh, yeah. I maintain and demand God dependence, not sponsor dependence. I am not going to save anybody. You've seen me here for not even the whole 12 weeks because I'm a hot mess. I'm a hot mess. I can't save anybody. My job is to dole out the instructions, share my experience, create a safe space, and you go out there and have an experience with your God, because your God is keeping you sober. And so in that 10th step, we go to God, and if we can't get can't get right size there, we call somebody and go, so this is what I'm thinking. And usually they laugh at me on the other end of the phone and go, oh, my God, Beth, you're a hot mess. How about this instead? And I'm like, yeah, I kind of realized that when it came out of my mouth actually verbally for the first time. So that was a bad idea. If we've harmed somebody already, we make amends quickly. And we move on with our day. And the only way an alcoholic can actually move on is by spending time and energy on another human being. Get the hell out of your head. Stop thinking about what you did at the bank and you yelled at the cashier and it was all a mistake because she said the wrong word. Like, just stop. Call a sponsee, call a buddy in the program, go open the door for five people at ShopRite, even though it's automatic. It's hilarious, trust me. Hey, let me get that for you. Move on with your day. Dude, why? Why did we as a population decide that we're just going to hold on to our mistakes? Hey, I'm going to take this club. I'm going to repeatedly beat myself over the head with it instead of going and doing the next right thing and living a life of purpose. It's ridiculous. So just let's not do it. It's a good plan in theory. Anyway, in step 11 is a two-time-a-day thing. At night, we write inventory. A lot of people in AA will tell you that this is the 10th step because the 10th step says we continue to take inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Isn't that what the 10th step says?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I just said that, right? It's not. It's the 11th step inventory. Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I frightened, right? We go through all these questions every single night because if I do, I can go to bed knowing what I need to do tomorrow. I can leave it there and get a good night's rest. I ask my God for intuitive thought or action, and I go to sleep, right? Next morning, I ask again, take the quiet time. People call it meditation. I call it getting quiet because meditation's got way too many definitions for me to choose from. So I just get quiet, right? The definition of meditation in 1930, whatever, when this book was written, was contemplative thought. So that's what I go to. I try to just get quiet, and I allow my mind to do whatever it's going to do. It's easier for me now than it used to be because my mind's not going like this all the time. Sometimes it still does, especially when my anxiety gets involved, and then we go to blows. That's always fun. But I sit and I get quiet, and I let those mind. I think about the day, the 24 hours ahead. Today was Sunday. I had to get up this morning. I was taking my daughter into the city. We're going to H&M. Tanta Lauren is coming with us. She's going to buy Morgan clothes. What does that look like? Have to have a financial conversation. How much is she willing to spend? These things are overwhelming for me, God. When we get there, be inside of me and be with me when we have to say, how much do you want to spend? And don't get scared and don't ignore it so that you're stuck with a personal $300 bill at the end of the day. Okay, I also have to drive into the city. Okay, I'm going to break the speed limit. Yep, totally willing to take the consequences for that. It's going to happen eventually. I said no to a party I was supposed to go to today. I feel a little guilty about it, but it was the right thing for me to do. God, please take this from me. And then I get out of bed and I go to the bathroom and I move through my day. Guess what I just did? I totally just set myself up for success. No matter what comes down the pike today, I've got God on my side. I can stop at any moment and check in with him. At night, tonight, I will go to bed. I will ask myself those questions. Do you see how this process just keeps me current? It keeps me from building a delusional lie. If you're in a delusional lie and you do your 11th step every single night, every time you get to that situation in your life where there's a delusional lie, you're going to stop writing and think about it before you decide what you're going to write on the paper. Mm-hmm. That's a cue that you're in a delusional lie. If you have to sit and contemplate, how am I going to write this on my 11th step, I suggest you call your sponsor the next day. If you're resentful at the same thing for more than 3 days in a row on your 11th step, that's a cue to call your sponsor and go, so I've been resentful at this, you know, situation with this guy at Starbucks for the last 3 days. I think I need to have a conversation. This is how we maintain currency, because let me tell you something. When the delusional lie builds back up, we cloud that connection with our higher power. The only thing that's giving you life today starts to get corroded. The connection starts to get corroded. When we have a resentment that starts to just become a part of who we are, you know, when you hear that name, Sally, it starts to corrode the... Yeah, we all have that one person. Mm-hmm. I got her in my head. I know who she is. My sponsor knows who she is. So we start to corrode that connection. When we start to believe that I'm not agnostic in any areas of my life, we start to take control, which, guess what? Corrodes the connection with our higher power. This is how alcoholism continues to work in our life over time. It's why we see people... We see everybody celebrating 1 through 7. We don't see anybody celebrating 9 through 11, 9 through 15. We see people we see people celebrating large amounts of time less and less and less because we're all really good. We're in here. We got 5 years. Man, I'm doing the deal. And then I get a job. And then I get married. And then I have kids. And the kids try to kill me on a regular basis. And you have to feed them 3 times a day every single day. I'm just... It's insane. 7 days a week. Like 365 days. Christmas, they still want food. I don't get it. Nobody tells you before you have kids. So life starts to take over, and the very gifts that we got because of our recovery start to challenge the old tapes that we have inside of us, therefore building the ego to protect us, building the delusional lie that we don't need God, and this is how we cycle back. If you can maintain doing 11 on a daily basis, which, by the way, I'm going to be straight up honest with you, I've never met anybody in these rooms who, when totally honest, has done their 11 step every night and every morning since they got sober, and I would challenge anybody to lie to me and tell me they've done it every single day. I can't believe I just said that on tape. Somebody's going to call me. You're like, oh, I always do mine. All right. You're better than me. So I do mine as often as I possibly can. I can tell you that I am so programmed in my 11th step that when I fall asleep on those nights where I'm just like, I ain't writing no 11th step tonight, God puts it right in my head. Was I resentful today? Was I selfish today? Did I pack everything I could into the stream of life? I know. And there have been nights where I'm like halfway through that, just kind of letting it float through my head, and I sit straight up in my bed and I'm like, I need to write that down. No, it doesn't happen often, but every once in a while I'll sit straight up and be like, I should probably write that down. In fact, I should probably call Nicoletta or Cass tomorrow morning. And I write myself a note. I am very lucky. I have a work phone and a personal phone. And because I'm old, I'm super, just, it's coming. Dude, the brain is dissolving. I text myself stuff. I will literally wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning and text my work cell. So I remember to do stuff in the morning. Which brings us to step 12, which I have to tell you is so much fun. By the time we get to step 12, it's so much fun. It takes, and we've talked about this multiple times, it takes me 2 years to really become solidified in relationships. So for me, new sponsorship relationships are a real challenge because my job as a sponsor is to allow a new woman into my home, which is where I do all my step work, is in my home. Sometimes they're home if they can't get out. Very rarely, though, for a whole plethora of reasons. My job as a sponsor, it says right here, the very first sentence, I just talked for half an hour.
Yeah, you can like, breathe.
I'm a hot mess. The first sentence on page 89, working with others, says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they're very ill. Let me be very super clear about this. There is no substitution for having a connection with another alcoholic. I can tell you, I am a super introvert. I know I look like an introvert. It's all a lie. There is no other thing on earth that will help bring me back to center than meeting with another alcoholic. My BFF of like 20-something years in this program, we went through the book together. We've had the same sponsor most of the time. We work completely opposite programs. For her, she would tell you the best thing that she asked me the other day. She goes, when do you feel most invested in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I don't like going to meetings. I don't even go to AA social functions anymore because there's just people and noise. Period. It takes me 2 years to really solidify relationships with friends, sponsees, everybody in my life. It takes me 2 years to really allow myself to be truly and always vulnerable with them. But when I am sitting down with another alcoholic who I've known for 15 minutes and I'm talking about what's going on in this book, I am safe and protected by my God. I am able to create a safe environment for this other human being to share my space with me. And there's something magical and spiritual for me that happens when we talk about this work. I feel most invested in Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm sitting in my home with another alcoholic reading this book. It's insane. I don't know how it works. Dude, I'm like on a good day a hot mess, but I've got so much crap in my past that keeps me from being a normal human being. The fact that I can even have another person in my home is a total freaking wholesale miracle. And the fact that I feel completely raw, vulnerable, open, like all of it, when I sit down with another alcoholic is a testament to this book and to this program. The 12th step is where the magic happens. It's where we get to share the dark, right? It talks about, I'm not going to go into the actual chapter. You should be reading this line by line and taking definitions and notes with your sponsors. But it's my honor and my privilege to share the darkness that's happened to me, the process I went through, and the light I get to live in. It reminds me of my process. It brings me to a place of, where do I need to continue to ask God to help me get through? You know, Karen came to me. She already had her inventory written. Didn't you have to rewrite yours?
You just had me at, yeah, some of, well, I'd left some things out.
Oops. We all do.
Yeah. Right?
But Karen came to me, this like wonderful, bright, I mean, look at her. She's amazing. She's just like happy all the time. And even when she's not happy, she's still got a big smile on her face, which we laugh about. But she's just this amazing light in my life. And I get to watch her process. I get to be a part of her path and watch her walk through these things. And the miracle is that when I walk with another human being like Karen and I get to witness her path, I get the gifts that she gets at the same time. Mm-hmm. So not only do I get to walk my own path and get my miracles and get my own growth and get my own life of my dreams, for some odd reason, when we walk, when we commence shoulder to shoulder with another alcoholic through their process, we get to be a part of their miracle. I really believe that I am sober today because of women like Karen in my life that keep me current in the spiritual experience that happens as we go through this work. As we get, I get to witness her path. I've watched her go through so many things, and every time I'm with her, there's this weird connection, and I wish I could explain it, and I really believe that the reason we can't articulate this connection is because it's going to force every single one of you to seek it out for yourself. But when I see Karen, when I think of Karen, there's something inside of me that goes like this. And I have that same experience when I go like this with Becca and with Jess and with Anita. Do you know what I mean? Like, we get to. My life is no longer I have to. Everything. I get to pay back all the debt that my husband put us in. It's so much fun. I get to reprimand my son and make him do his homework. I get to do these things. And I have to tell you, you know, I used to get really pissed off about this book where it says, you know, we capitalize when, oh, where does it say that? Where we, when tragedy comes into our life, we capitalize on it.
to, like, you know, show God's omnipotence, I'd be like, dude, screw you. I just lost, like, my job. I'm not going to capitalize on anything happy. I'm pissed off. And that used to be me through this process. But even now, in 2018, we lived in Charlotte, no family around, which means if we weren't with our kids, we had to pay somebody to be with our kids. We were in a private preschool, and it was the year that both of them were. It was the 1 year that we had to pay two tuitions to this private preschool. 2018, my husband loses his job. I'm a stay-at-home mom. We almost got divorced that year because of, you know, untreated alcoholism, blah, 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 blew our marriage up, all that stuff. So that all happened. That all exploded. We went into therapy. We had insurance. We had the preschool. We had everything going in the right direction. We were deciding whether we were going to restart our marriage or we were going to get divorced. And then he lost his job. And we couldn't pay for the school, and the school gave us a scholarship, and we couldn't pay for camp. So we were forced to spend the entire summer together, all four of us, and you know, we were so lucky. My husband, we bought the house. He worked for a bank. And we had this crazy insurance policy. It's like, well, if you lose your job through no job fault of your own, we pay your mortgage for 6 months. Like, God literally took my husband's job so that we could put our family back together. For like $400 or some insanely cheap price in Charlotte, North Carolina, we bought four season passes to the Six Flags down there. Man, we were there like 4 days a week. It was insane. My daughter knew where, she was like two at the time. She's like, no, that ride's over there. I swear she could have been a guide at the damn park by the end of the summer. But in that moment, I was petrified. And because I get to live this program, we capitalized on this time in our lives, and we decided in that time to reboot our entire family. We restructured everything, and now a million years later, we're back in New Jersey. We both have jobs. We're doing well. The marriage is still alive. It's because we had that time. So all these bad things happen. I understand when I see bad things happen now, people, I have to be really careful talking to normal people because they really get mad at me. And, you know, like when I was in Charlotte, I remember one of my friends' kids got really, really sick. And I went, oh, my God, thank God you have health insurance. She didn't talk to me for like 2 weeks. She's like, how dare you? I'm like, well, I mean, you know, the number one reason for bankruptcy in the country for people going homeless is medical bills. How lucky are you? Tragedy's going to happen. God's got your back. And then she apologized. It was really, really funny. She goes, I didn't realize. But anyway. But it's like, you know, bad stuff's going to happen. We don't have to be angry about it. Right? When we have this process, we have each other. Mm-hmm. When we walk with each other, nothing but good can come from it. So when I see something bad happen today, I'm like, wow, I wonder what that's going to look like in 6 months. Mm-hmm. This is my experience. This is what has shifted the trajectory of my life and my expectation of my life is that bad things are going to happen. Period. Accept it. It's going to happen. It's going to happen at 3 o'clock on some random-ass Tuesday, and you're not going to know what's going on, but it's going to hurt, and it's going to suck, and it's going to be painful. And I've gotten to my light and to the point in my life where it's happened so many times that I literally, when bad things happen, I think, wow, what is this going to look like in 6 months? I'm so lucky. How lucky are we? So anyway, back to step 12, because I told you I was going to go off on a rant. And this is, I mean, you know, because I know that there were a lot of new people in here tonight.
Oh, gosh,
you know,
sorry.
So when you're getting a sponsor, no. I mean, it's, you know, look for somebody who has something that you want. I mean, it's why it works for Beth and I. You know, she is a representation to me of what the steps look like in real life. She, you know, I mean, she's a hot mess, and she shares that with me. You know, and no matter what, she would not do the work for me. She kept taking me, talk about leaning in. I just wanted to lean on her, lean on her, lean on her. And as much as we walk arm in arm, she would shift me to God, shift me to God. I would like text her like something great happened, like, and I wanted her to say, oh, Karen, you're so awesome. And she would say, yay, God. And I'd be, son of a bitch.
That's totally what I said.
Yay, God. And I mean, honestly, I'd be like, what did God have to do with this? I did. did this. And that's how much I didn't even realize my thinking was. She just kept shifting and shifting and shifting until I could find my way with my God on my journey. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking when you're talking, it's so, I don't know why, but you know the game we play when we're little, oh, this is going to show how old I am. I don't know if anybody plays it anymore. Red Rover, Red Rover, let somebody come over and you stand arm in arm. That's kind of like what you get with your sisterhood and your sponsors and that. I mean, the stronger you are, the more you're linked together, the more somebody can't break in. I mean, this disease is a beast, and it's going to come at you. Life is going to come at you. Who do you want to be arm in arm with? You know, who do you want that is safe, that you can lean in, that you can be vulnerable with, that you can tell? I mean, I told her things that I swore I would never tell anyone. I didn't even admit them to myself, let alone to another human being. So when I find them coming out of my mouth, but that's where I got to meet, you know, life eyeball to eyeball, walk down the street, that shame and that guilt. I told her, I mean, I'm just so overwhelmed with shame and guilt, and it will never change. This is like my destiny. I guess I was kind of a victim there, wasn't I? But I believed it. I really believed it. And just do the work, and going through, sharing experiences. And when you take somebody through that, when you pass on something that has so freely been given to you, it is an experience that you just can't explain. There really aren't words.
There's no words.
Yeah.
For it. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, and this book tells us, I mean, our purpose is, you know, how can I be of service? And that's what it is. I mean, that's what we do. We get a life. We get a spiritual life, and that has weight to it, that has value.
Purpose.
Yeah, and then we get to show somebody else how to find it. I mean, my gosh, it's so simplistic, but it's so beautiful. It's so amazing. In the next paragraph, right after where Beth read that first one, I mean, it talks about the promises of this step. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. And he uses the word must. You know, what my circle looks like, and it's so interesting. We come from all these different places and all these different paths, and you know, and you put us together, and there's a bond that is different than anything I've ever known. We were at a girl's house last night. She had a Friendsgiving. One of my sponsees, because she's going to be in Paris on her honeymoon over Thanksgiving. And, you know, here again, you know, at telling God yesterday morning, I can't feel anything, I'm detached. I had a meltdown of giggles with another woman that, I mean, my side hurt. It was one of those, like, you know, I mean, just gifts, just given. I ask, and God answers. And why that still surprises me, because I'm sitting here clean and sober with, you know, a guy who loves me, beautiful friends, you know, roof, and I still, he comes up and he does for me, and I'm like, wow, you know, wow.
And I think that's the thing, too. It's like Karen and I have this really deep connection.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it doesn't, just to be very, very super clear, I'm not a warm and fuzzy kind of human being. Like, with my kids I am, usually, unless they piss me off. But sponsorship is not a friendship.
I know. Those boundaries were so clear. I wanted to hang out with her and shop and have coffee and her, like, come bring your kids over. I'll babysit. I mean, all of that stuff. No.
Mm-mm. And I think it's important to talk about that here because we've come to a different place.
Yes.
Right? So the process of sponsorship is just that. Just like everything else in life, it is a process. I work with the girls that I work with, and I maintain a very large boundary. I think that this is why sponsorship is like my thing. I think that my own damage, my own issues that I had, like, that are kind of make me who I am, make me well suited to be a sponsor, because I am not going to permanently attach for a long time, which gives me a perfect opportunity to give you a safe space to have your experience. I am not attached to your outcome in any way, shape, or form. So when you come to my house and you say things, and Karen's never said this, but if a sponsee comes to my house and is like, I think I want to get a divorce, I'd be like, okay, why? Well, you know, does it, you know, but is it? And I'll just keep asking questions. I'm really just on a fact-finding mission just to find out information. I'm not attached to your marriage in any way, shape, or form. I don't care if you're married. I don't care if you're single. I don't care if you drop your kids off at the fire station because you don't want to be a parent. I don't care if you have an affair. I don't care if you – I don't care what you do with your life. This is about you. This, when you come to me as a sponsor, it's my opportunity to say, you know, we got all this really great stuff in here. Some of it kind of sucks to do, but when you get through it, it's like so awesome. You get to live whatever life you want to live. Well, what do you want? What should my life look like? I don't freaking know. I'm still trying to figure out my own. Look, I just turned 46.
So she wouldn't give me answers, as you could see. I mean, she kept pointing me to God and pointing me to the book, would share experiences, but not even that much. Like, this is the most I've heard her talk. Wow. she really is an introvert. But what the gift in that was, and taught me how I share with the girls that I sponsor. I wanted to be so codependent with her. I mean, yeah. I was such a mess. I was so broken, and I wanted somebody to fix me. And if she would have done that, I would have let her step in. Oh, my God. I mean, I begged her to do it. But then my sobriety would have rested on her. And
such a bad idea.
Beth knows herself well enough in her program. She'll be like, I can't keep you sober. And I'd be like, why not? Like, if she would move away, my world would have crumbled. If she would have relapsed. I mean, anything that, like, you know. And I wanted to be, and it was all about, you need to be calling other women. You need to be building a network. You need to be doing this. And, it, you know, so for me, it felt like kind of like the mama bird pushing you out of the nest and you don't know how to fly. But was saving my life without me even knowing it. But if she wouldn't have kept those boundaries clear, I would have been totally dependent on you instead of God. And I've shared enough that I've been around for a while and have had, you know, relapses after a lot of years, and I could never figure out why. But I've never had this kind of relationship with God. I've never taken this journey with God before. So when I needed it, you showed up.
And what's different now is that I take a sponsee through this process. And then we continue to talk, and it's not as often, and then we continue to meet, and it's not as often, but what happens then is the opportunity for us to actually be peers in these rooms. I do believe there is a hierarchy of sponsorship until you are in and through your ninth step. If you are going through the work with somebody, I put the person that I am working the steps with above me in the fact that I'm antagonistic on a good day, but if I put that person above me as I go through these steps, I'm conceding to their rule. Because I can't work my own program. I need to take direction in order to move to the next level. But when we are through these steps, the playing field needs to be leveled. Because if I don't, I start to gain power in that this is my sponsee, and do you see her recovery is very good, and I'm going to sell her on Etsy instead of eBay.
And they're all doing so well.
And they're all doing so well.
I mean, ego stuff.
It's funny, too, because...
And it's hard not to go there.
It's hard not to go there. But what happens for me is that I physically and forcibly take a step back after they're done with their ninth step and become their peer. We're friends.
Mm-hmm.
We're buddies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, now we're, you know, we can go get coffee.
Yeah, she'll call and she'll say, meet for lunch. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
But it's because...
What time? Where?
Right, because you have a God. You have a program, and you have a God. And Karen has stepped in for me now, right? So here's where it gets awesome. Because we're peers, because we are walking this path shoulder to shoulder, there have been times where I've reached out to Karen and said, I'm not okay. I need somebody to talk to. This is what building the fellowship you create looks like, right? So we are on even footing. There have been times, I think both of us have been like, I'm putting my sponsor hat on here. Like, maybe you've done this to me. You came, I don't remember when it was, but you came and sat at my kitchen table and you're like, you need to look at this. And I was like, ugh, fine. So if I don't do that, if I maintain that these are my sponsees and I am the sponsor, what have I just done to myself? I'm separated myself. Mm-hmm. I've put myself as separate from. And for me, what that means is maybe you have to do that, but I don't. And then guess who gets sick? So this is why it's so important that we go through the steps, we commence shoulder to shoulder through this 12th step, and we become a community of peers. Every single person in this room has something to offer every single person in this room. And if we constantly, and here's the other side of it, and then I'll shut up. Probably. Here's the other side of it. I have been guided by God for my whole life, and I didn't know it. I stumbled upon my sponsor because I wanted to, at 6.5 years sober, buy a bottle of Bacardi rum and try to drive my Saturn SL off of an overpass, which wouldn't have been possible. It's a plastic car. So the plan was flawed. The plan was flawed. But thank God. So here's the deal. If I am a sponsee underneath the rule of a sponsor, right? And I have my sisters and she's the boss. Guess what I never do? I never realize that I have something to offer every single person in this room. I never am afforded the opportunity to stand on my own 2 feet as a whole human being. I am under nobody's rule.
Right.
I am not under my sponsor's rule. I am not under God's rule. I am not under my husband's rule. Don't even enter that into the slate. He will just be like, that's an option? No. I am under nobody's rule. And this gives me two different, again, we're going to talk about two more sides. It's an awesome responsibility because guess what? I can't blame my failings on anybody. I am responsible for my life. I am responsible for maintaining my connection with God to maintain my recovery. But on the other side of that, I get to be proud of who I am. This is the proper use of the will. I get to choose a career that I want to do, that gives me purpose, that gives me fire, that makes me feel passion, that I get to make a difference in the part of this world that I want to. It gives me ambition to become all that I can be for my God. That's my motivation, right? I get that good girl thing going on, too.
I know you do.
So, don't tell anybody. So, it's, do you, I want to be super clear about this. We are God-dependent. We are not to be dependent on other humans, whether it's a family member or a sponsor. These are the delusional lies that we hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that keep us living in an incredibly small box. It's a box that's not supposed to exist, and it is so much smaller than you are. You are a whole human being who has alcoholism. You get to go through this process. I'm giving myself shivers because it's like I feel like I've come full circle over the last couple of years with this. You get to go through this process as many times as you would like to become yet a better version of who you are. If you think you're awesome, awesome. You can be more awesome. Lean in, do more work, and become more awesome. We are agents of God. We are miracles sitting in this room. I get to watch the people that don't get this gift.
understand, you did not get yourself sober. You were chosen to get sober. I don't know why so many hundreds of thousands of people don't get chosen to get sober. They cannot stop drinking and they die. That should give your seat a little more depth and weight tonight. When you wake up tomorrow morning, use that day to do something. If you feel spiritually pulled, fuck it, do it.
Make a big mistake. Something to offer,
right?
Everybody,
make a big ass mistake because you know how to make amends. We are an incredibly lucky room of people. I want every single person in this room and every person in this world, I don't care if they're alcoholic or not, to feel joy. I don't care what it takes to get you there. If I can help you, I will. Because I get to feel joy. I was so dead inside when I got sober. I was so dead inside for years sober. And I get to feel joy every day. Sometimes for 2.4 seconds before my daughter pisses me off. And sometimes for most of the day. I know that God wants every single person in this world to feel joy. We can do that. It starts with this process. When you've completed this process, your job, your responsibility is to help somebody else through this process. If we all do this, we will all stay sober. That's all I share.
That's a perfect place to end.
Right. Yes! Oh, wow. Don't anybody ever listen to that.